Now we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, and we read Text 4. Shreya Sritim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibho. Klishanti Ekevala Bodha Labdaye. Deshama Saukleshala Eva Shishate. Nanya Dhyatastula Tushavagatinam.
Nanya Dhyatastula Tushavagatinam.
Hare Krishna. Shreya. Of supreme benefit.
Of supreme benefit.
Sritim.
Sritim.
The path.
Bhaktim,
devotional service, Udasya,
rejecting,
Te, day,
Vibho,
O Almighty Lord, Klishanti,
struggle,
Ye, who,
Kevala,
exclusive,
Bodha,
of knowledge,
Labdaye,
for the achievement,
Tesham,
for them,
Asau,
this,
Kleshala,
Botheration,
Eva,
merely,
Shishate,
remains,
Na,
nothing. Anyat,
other.
Yata,
just as.
Stulatusha,
empty husks.
Avagatinam,
for those who are beating.
Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace, Saisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Disciples ki jai. Okay. We'll come to that later. My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Purport. Loving service to the Supreme Person is the natural and eternal function of every living entity. If a person renounces his own constitutional function and instead laboriously seeks so-called enlightenment through impersonal speculative knowledge, his result is simply the trouble and bother that come from following an artificial process. A fool may beat an empty husk, not knowing that the grain has already been removed. Similarly, foolish is the person who throws his mind again and again in the pursuit of knowledge without surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is the very substance and goal of knowledge, just as grain is the substance and goal of the entire agricultural effort. Vedic knowledge, or indeed material science without the personality of Godhead, is exactly like an empty and useless husk of wheat. One may argue that by practicing yoga or cultivating impersonal knowledge, one can acquire prestige, wealth, mystic powers, or even impersonal liberation. But these so-called gains are actually useless because they do not situate the living being in his constitutional position of loving service to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, such results, being superfluous to the living being's essential nature, are impermanent. As stated in the Nisimha Purana, Patreshu Pushpeshu Paleshu Toyeshu Akrita Labyeshu Vedaiva Svatsu Bhaktya Sulabhya Purushe Purane Muktyai kim artam kriyate prayatna. Since the primeval personality of Godhead is easily attained by offering him such things as leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are all found without difficulty, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? Although the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna is very simple, it is extremely difficult for stubborn conditional souls to completely humble themselves before the Supreme Personality of Godhead and absorb themselves 24 hours a day in his loving service. The mood of loving service is anathema to belligerent conditioned souls determined to defy God and enjoy. When such stubborn conditioned souls attempt to bypass surrendering to God through proud attempts at philosophical speculation, austerity, and yoga, they are turned back to the material platform by the powerful laws of God and violently merged into the heaving ocean of insignificance called the material world. There's a few ideas here. One of them is that devotional service is very easy. And if you tell this to the devotees, they say, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj said that if you think devotional service is easy, then you're probably 2 weeks in the movement. Then you have no idea what you're talking about. But the point is that compared to other processes, it's easy. It's really easy. So we have some examples we see in Bhagavatam. We have usually when these yoga people say that they want to achieve self-realization, I said, yeah, you want? All right. We have an example. We have a success story. We have this 5-year-old boy. He achieved self-realization in 6 months only. So we'll give you the process. No problem. Come. Well, okay. Let's start. So first month, Dhruva Maharaj ate only fruits and berries on every third day. So the starter kit. Bhima is not here, so I would try to propose him this diet. every third day you take some fruits. Probably not, not 3 meals a day, on that day, few, something, once. And then what did he do in the second month? Second month, he ate only every 6 days, and he took dry grass and leaves. So that's already extreme. And this is just the first 2 months. Third month, he drank water, only water, every 9 days. Good. that's somehow our reference. Devotional service, our process can be hard sometimes. But compared to this, maybe it's a bit easier. And we also have Hiranyakashipu, we can try. He was doing this severe meditation. He says that Hiranyakashipu began performing his austerity by standing with his toes on the ground, keeping his arms upward and looking toward the sky. Who wants to try? So he said, I try to sit there for, I manage for a few seconds. And then Hiranyakashipu stayed a bit longer. I don't know, thousands of years of the demigods. Just. And when Lord Brahma came after he did all these austerities, he was like in an anthill. He was covered. And the demigods who were with Lord Brahma, they had no idea where he is. And only Lord Brahma said, oh, he's here. Looks like here. And he was like only bones. And heavy austerity. And if you think like that, it's to achieve anything worthwhile, it requires a huge amount of effort. Huge amount of effort. Not only devotional service. And I mean, everyone is going to work every day, you know, like they squeeze the juice out of you. Is that? So yeah, to and at least you're using this, you're putting this effort for a worthwhile purpose. So that's the point. To achieve everything, anything worthwhile, requires a lot of effort. And devotional service is actually easier than the other processes. You know, you look at the non-devotees; they spend a lot of energy for some stupid things. So that's what it means, that it's very easy. It's easier than any other process, you know, like if you want to do these austerities that they should do. I mean, we're not comparing to this yoga they are practicing nowadays. They do the 5 minutes meditation every day. When they are reaching, I don't know, they feel the presence. Oh, come on, I mean, that's a joke. But real yoga, you know. Anyway, and then the point is, what, even if you succeed, you put it all this effort and then you're successful. And then the question is, so what? what did you actually achieve? There's a, explained in this purport, in the purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada, that actually these results are impermanent. I was we were coming yesterday from Sankirtan with Bhaktadomen, and there was this BMW, you know, like this expensive BMW. And he was like agitated because he wanted to pass, and okay. And then after 20 kilometers, where I was like driving normally, you know, like legally and so on. And after 20 kilometers, we entered in Ljubljana, and he's just in front of me. And I was like thinking, I mean, what's the point, you know, like I have this huge car, you know, this 100,000 euros, 200,000 euros, you're like, and then after 20 kilometers, you're just in front, you know, like, what's the point, you know, like, what's the benefit, you know, what did you achieve? And then we were talking, and Bhaktadomen was explaining that actually this car, you know, that this is like a good car, but there are better cars. So you go with this car, you impress some people, and they are you try to impress some people, and they say, oh, but I know this other person, they have. You know, they have this other car, and in comparison, your car is like, you know, not so good. this is the principle. No matter how good you have something, there's someone who has better. So, what's the point, you know? Of course, I mean, we need some functional cars, but anyway. You can be on top, you know, like you're like the best, you know. And then there's this famous example of Muhammad Ali, who is this famous boxer. There's this video which like he's on top, he's beating everyone, and he's like, I am the greatest. And after sometimes he gets this disease called Parkinson, just shaking your whole body, you know, like. And then Muhammad Ali, he was a bit smart. Apparently, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami was preaching to him. In some video, he gives even this example by Prahlad Maharaj, that people waste half of the life in this and this. It's exactly the arguments of Prahlad Maharaj. And so he says, God gave me Parkinson to show me that I'm not the greatest, he is. this is quote from Muhammad Ali. You know? I mean, he was smart, you know, he understood. He was a bit pious, and so he understood. So you're like this on top, and then you get Parkinson, you know, and it's like, you're the greatest. What kind of greatest are you? And that's actually the principle in the material world. There's this book called The Mirror of Brahma. It's written by Atmatattva Prabhu. I got it, but it wasn't published. But anyway, somehow I got it. And he explains his journey to Krishna consciousness, how he met the devotees and so on. And Atmatattva Prabhu, his Indian body. And if you think here there are many spiritual options, just try to go to India. Everything. So he was. He met all these people, you know, like he met these people. There's left hand tantra. There's right hand tantra. Left hand tantra is like black magic. These people who go and do things in the cemeteries and things that actually work. He met this mystic. He put a sword in the air and said, "Take it off." And he couldn't. Like. So these people actually had some mystic powers. They were not like these yogis. And they knew what's the process to achieve this mystic power. And they did it, you know. Like, and every time he went to someone who had powers, there was always, this guy was aware that there's actually someone more powerful than me. And if this person more powerful than me has a bad day, then all my powers are gone. So, what's the point, you know? And then there were these yogis in the Himalayas, and they're like different floors, you know, like on this floor there's yogis on this level, you know, and then on the next floor there's yogis on next level who have more power. So, whatever you do, you know, there's someone who has more power than you. That was what he understood by visiting all these people, because he was visiting them and is like, okay, you have some powers. Yeah, I have. And eventually he found out, oh, there's someone who has more power. So that's, and then the conclusion of that is that of left-hand tantra, after you do it for some time, anyway, you get some heavy karmic reactions, but is that there's someone more powerful than you. And then you get to right-hand tantra. Right-hand tantra means worship of demigods, of Durga Devi. Then you understand, oh, there's someone more powerful than me, then I cannot do anything. Then I have to worship them. No. And eventually, if you're really intelligent, this is a very slow process. But Prabhu did it like in a relatively short time. He still got it. And then you understand, okay, by this right hand tantra, you understand, oh, there's Durga, there's this. And then finally, you should understand, oh, there's Krishna. Why not worship Krishna? You know, like if you have to worship someone. And eventually, this devotee, he met Srila Prabhupada, and he got accepted by Srila Prabhupada. It was funny. He describes that he was... he took sannyas by himself somehow, and they had this initiation list they brought to Srila Prabhupada, and there was like this Bhakta Joe, Bhakta this, Bhakta this, and Atmananda Swami. And Prabhupada was looking like, he's a Swami? Yeah. Okay. So this he came for first initiation as Atmananda Swami. Okay. So he came in Atmatattva Prabhu. Very nice devotee. Anyway, very advanced. Anyway, the point is that no matter what you achieve, there's always more. And there's this is impermanent, and there's always some problem. It's there's always more, and there's always something that will happen to whatever you achieve and finished. And even this achieving this impersonal Brahman, It's temporary. Srila Prabhupada explains that they are coming back, and he says, because they are lonely. So, no matter what you achieve, you put a lot of effort into achieving things, and so what? And then you're like, it's gone. You enjoy for some time, and it's gone. If you still want to enjoy, finished. So better put your effort in something that is worth putting the effort in. And in the last part of the purport, it's explained why people don't follow this process. And the answer is because they are not humble. It takes some humbleness to follow the process. That's why Lomanchita Prabhu explains that was reading these parts from Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's why this verse Trinadapi Sunichena is so important. Because if you're not humble, then you cannot follow the process. You'll think that I'll figure it out. all the time you meet these people, like, I'm good. You meet them, huh? Oh, but there's lots of these people who, I'm good. All right, good luck. What can you do, you know? Because they are good. You have to be humble to follow this process. And there's this example. And Lord Chaitanya, there's quite some examples. He's trying to make us humble. And this is trying to make everyone humble. If you're humble, you can. And there's this example of, there's more examples. There's one poet, and there's more examples where proud people come to Lord Chaitanya. First thing, he smashes their pride. And then we can discuss. But as long as they are proud, no point in discussion. One of them is Vallabhacharya. Vallabhacharya was, when he met Lord Chaitanya, he was like this high-profile personality. You know, like very learned, very scholarly, very, you know, well-known. So, Lord Chaitanya knew, okay, good. Maybe you're a bit proud. And he was a bit proud. He was. And it's explained there. So they met two times, once in Prayag, I think, and one in Jagannath Puri. And in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Vallabha Bhatta was a great learned scholar of Vaishnavism. In the beginning, he was very much devoted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But since he thought he could not receive proper respect from him, he later joined the Vishnu Swami sect and became the Acharya of that sect. So, I mean, of course, he became the Acharya of a bona fide Vaishnava sect, but he was not able to stay in the association of Lord Chaitanya because he was proud. And the first time they meet, it's funny, there was Lord Chaitanya and there was Srila Rupa Goswami. And when Srila Rupa Goswami saw Vallabhacharya, he said, he ran away from him. Vallabhacharya was coming and Rupa Goswami was running, you know, from him. And he's like, I am untouchable and most sinful. Please do not touch me. You know, like, I mean, Rupa Goswami was not faking it. You know, like, he was actually feeling humble. Real humble. And Lord Chaitanya, knowing the mentality of Vallabhacharya, he was trying to put more fires. Don't touch him, for he belongs to a very low caste. You are a follower of Vedic principles and are a well-experienced performer of many sacrifices. You also belong to the aristocracy. Don't touch him because you're high profile. He's low. Useless. And of course, Vallabhacharya, being intelligent, he understood this, you know, like because he says after that, okay, you are constantly chanting Hare Krishna, so how can you be low? But still, he had this mentality, and Lord Chaitanya was
constantly pushing him. Then this is in Prayag, and then they meet again in Jagannath Puri, and Vallabhacharya starts glorifying Lord Chaitanya, how he's that you're empowered by Krishna if you can spread the holy name around. And Lord Chaitanya starts glorifying the devotees. He says, no. My mind became purified because I associated with Advaita Acharya. And then from Lord Nityananda I learned this, and then from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya I learned this, and then from Ramananda Raya I learned this, and then, you know. he's like, what? And the message is that maybe you can also learn something from these devotees, you know. If I learn from them, maybe. So every time Vallabhacharya comes and he's proud, he's like, Lord Chaitanya is just smashing him, you know. And then there's the final point where Vallabhacharya comes. This was somehow the devotees didn't have too much common sense, and they put it in a Back to Godhead magazine in India. So anyway, this got really bad. Because Sumati Morarji Mataji was from Vallabha Acharya Sampradaya, and it was cut really bad. But so Vallabha Acharya comes and he tells Lord Chaitanya, look, I made this commentary, and I'm just completely smashing Sridhar Swami. No, Lord Chaitanya is like, what? Because Sridhar Swami is the authority on commenting Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya is like, what? And he says, there's this very tough thing he says. It's like, whoever doesn't accept the Swami is a prostitute. Swami also means husband. So he's like, Vallabhacharya is like completely smashed. And after being smashed a few times, he's just like, okay, he gets it, you know, like, okay, maybe I should be more humble. And then he goes back and he apologizes to Lord Chaitanya, and he understands. But still, some pride is still there, because he cannot stay in the association of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. He cannot actually accept this instruction that, okay, how about you learn from Ramananda Raya something? How about you get... And this is what we... the attitude we have to learn, that, okay, maybe there's Krishna, there's my spiritual master, and there's other devotees I could learn from. And if I'm humble enough, I might learn something. And if I'm not humble enough, then I will be some sort of a devotee, but might be not. No, like I was listening, His Holiness Prahladananda Maharaj was giving this class in Mayapur, and he gave this example of Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle. I mean, they were devotees. There were some sort of devotees. But due to their opulence, they're not humble enough to be submissive, to be like completely surrendered devotees. So, yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, all these qualifications we think we have, or we... Because sometimes it's just like, it's not even a qualification. We're proud of our education. What kind of education? This is demoniac education. Like, we're proud of our demoniac education. Or what can we... What are we proud of? You know, like, we're proud of so many things, but... I mean, should we really be? Is it something? Even we're proud of, okay, I'm proud of my cooking, I'm proud of my this. There's many ways you can be proud. And if you're proud, you're not humble enough, then you cannot chant Hare Krishna properly. You cannot do devotional service properly. You cannot chant Hare Krishna in this mood, like Prabhupada said, like a lost child is calling for his mother. He doesn't have a plan B. He doesn't say, I'm good. But
I can also chant Hare Krishna. No, he's not good. He's completely lost. Jai, okay, I'll stop here. If there's some questions, comments.
I was hoping.
If you do not talk, I don't have to ask.
No, it's okay. Just joking.
So you mentioned that if we are not humble, we cannot follow the process, and thus cannot become devotees. And then you said that also if we are not humble, we can be some sorts of devotees. And also we can see there are devotees who do follow the process, I mean, at least externally, you see them coming to programs, chanting, whatever, and yet you also see them that they are very proud of the position they achieved and their knowledge, even from the spiritual books okay. that we have. So which one is it? Can we follow or not the process if we are not humble?
Both. it's not black or white, you know, like... It's usually it's a gray, you know. We can, I gave this example, the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. They were some sort of devotees. And being humble is not a zero or one. You know, it's not, you're complete.
I'm sorry, I'm a computer engineer.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, but it's not zero or one, you know, like there's, it's not digital, it's analogic. So to the degree you're humble, you can make some progress. And to the degree you're not humble, you're blocking somehow your progress. So yeah, we're all somehow, we all have our things that we're proud of. And yeah, I mean, that's what's blocking us. And also, when we say that other devotees are proud, you don't know. You know, like you know there's a different, you know how they act externally, but you don't know how they are internally. You know, because there's this example, Chaitanya Chandra Charan Prabhu was giving this example to understand that maybe our we see some facts, but what is behind the facts, we might not know. You know, like we see, okay, he acts like this. Why? We don't know. You don't.
Sometimes we do.
Sometimes you do.
We can see if some senior devotee looks at a beginner devotee and said, oh, you have much more to follow and to progress until you reach my stage. So that's quite obvious.
Yeah, some cases it's obvious, but some cases it's not so obvious, you know, like that. This example, like, because sometimes we think we see something, and it's not what we think we see. There's this example, he was like late for Sunday feast, and then this senior devotee was eating some sweets. He could see there was no more sweets. There was no more, I don't know, gulab jamuns, whatever they had. And then he was late, and he was like, oh, there's no gulab jamuns. And then this senior devotee said, he could see in that plate that there was he had a gulab jamun, and he was asking the servants, "Oh, is there some sweets? Is there some gulab jamun?" And he was like, "Look at this greedy guy. He wants to have two, and I didn't have any." And then some of the servers found some gulab jamun on their plate, you know, because this guy was a senior devotee, and he wanted to give to this. This one, and he said, no, give to him. And he felt like completely, to this him, he was criticizing that, oh, look, this senior devotee. No, it's not for me, it's for him, for him, you know, because I saw he came late. And so sometimes it's like, you don't know, you know, like, but anyway, it's, you can be proud of anything. You can be proud of material achievements, and you can be proud of devotional achievements. You can be proud of how many books you distribute. You can be...
It's easy to be proud if you have something, you know, like, so you get proud. But you're not gonna chant Hare Krishna. You chant some Hare Krishna, like we all chant Hare Krishna, but you're gonna chant in this mood that of complete surrender to Krishna. You'll be in the movement, but are you gonna be a fully surrendered devotee? You might do some service externally, but so it's related. They say it's related, and it's analogic. Sorry. Okay. Rugai Prabhu has a. Now, today is tough questions today.
my question is: thank you for the lecture. Thank you for your humility. I wanted to ask, but humility is probably the natural quality of the soul. So all we have to do is remove the garbage above, and humility comes out.
Yes. all we need to do. This process might take some time, but it's also natural. But sometimes it's good to cultivate it. And if you detect some pride, it's good to see that. I'm being proud and.
Yeah, but if we cultivate it, that means we are already in the right place, at least for the time being, when we cultivate it. No? For some, it's so natural for us.
Yeah, at least you're, Prabhupada said, that you're at least you're in the shower. And if you're in the shower, you're going to get clean at some point. Right. Marcel probably had a question, or not.
Thank you for the inspiring lecture. I was just wanted to ask, for some rasas, when it so happens that our pride is smashed, how can we accept it so that we don't become envious or angry because of this? So how can we accept it that then really become humble after our pride is smashed?
We were talking about this next time. It's difficult. But if you're intelligent, you understand that it's for your own benefit. That so whatever Krishna is, and it's good to usually the way men do it. I don't know if it's but experience is like that. Usually men react and then think. Sometimes they do like this. You tell some men, look, this is horrible, this is bad, this is and then they're like, how dare you tell me this? And then you know they after they do this, you try at least not to do it externally. You know, you can do it in your mind. And then they go home and they think, And when they think, they like, but actually he was right. it's not so much about how we feel. It's good. We have to distinguish between things that we like and things that are good for us. And if it's good for us, not everyone that smashes your pride is your friend. But sometimes devotees or senior devotees who know you, or they can, you need to get to that point where you open yourself enough that you can get some feedback, that you hear what you don't want to hear but you need to hear, and that you understand that actually they want to help you. You know, so that's you have to find some mentor, some people that you're you're like in this state. And if you don't have this, that's why it's good to stay in the association of devotees. That's why it's good to have seniors and also peers. Seniors who will, but usually one of the great tools is peers, people that you spend, devotees you spend a lot of time with. Because seniors, you know, like they are there and they don't see what you do. And peers, they are with you, you know, and they see what you do. So seniors, if they are not completely mystical, which sometimes they are, but you can use both tools. One is seniors and one is peers. If you open up to getting feedback from peers, then they will give you a feedback. And that's also very useful because they see, oh, you know, this seems... It seems like you're very proud. You know, what's this? You know, like so. Yeah, you have to. Get, and that's also the purpose of a temple. You know, that's why they're living. Because in the temple you don't have your own place. You know, devotees will see you, what you're doing. You know, you live in the association of devotees. They will see what you're doing, and then they can say something. You know. What's this? You know, if you hide somewhere in the corner, no devotee association, then yeah. And I don't know if that helps. Okay.
I just wanted to say something related to Prabhu's question, that I think it also matters the way in which you are smashed. Like if if you feel that the person wants to help you, or he or she does it for your own good, then you have some reaction. But you can also feel sometimes if they do it out of maliciousness or in a very ugly way or in public, which is not supposed to happen so much, and then the reaction is different. So I think it's
of course.
You have to react also according to how you are told things, and you have to restrain yourself probably more when things don't happen in a nice way.
Yeah, there's a culture to correcting. So yeah, it should be done properly. But there's also to some degree we should be open to be corrected even if it's not done properly. But if someone is completely off, then I mean, Hare Krishna, you know, like we go for Sankirtan, there's these people that are like, marsh, marsh. usually you cannot take some positive benefit from this feedback, you know, like they were trying to correct me. You just and just go. So yeah, there's you don't have to be accept, take anything anyway. All right. Comment, okay.
The comment is in connection with Marcel's question and then Mataji's also response. I agree with her because the classic example in Krishna book is when Lord Indra was chastised by Lord Krishna. And for something that really stands out for me in this past, and of course there's so much we can learn, but something that really stands out for me is that how Lord Krishna chastised Indradev. He took him in the corner. He didn't chastise him in front of all the Brajavasis. He actually took him in the corner, and that's when he chastised him or, you know, made him the correction. So that is something that I really believe, that somebody who is in authority to chastise the devotee shouldn't do in public to humiliate the person, rather to, you know, do it personally.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some culture in correcting. There's some requirements. One is that you are the person to correct, like you are in a position of authority. Second is that you are the well-wisher of the person who you want to correct. And then that you're also means that you are actually willing to help. to fix this problem. So that's more or less. I don't remember all the details, but yeah, that's what you said. Yeah, of course. But there's a how to correct, and there's how to accept correction. If you're humble, we can accept even very not appropriate correction. But there's some limits, you know. Like you can accept from not so appropriate correction also something. No, humanly. A humanly correction you can accept, but non-humanly one. Anyway. I mean, for example, you're in Harinam, you know, like, and you do something completely off, you know, like, and then someone who is an authority, because, you know, the police will come and then they will get our permits off and something, then he will say, look, you cannot do that. I mean, you have to get it, you know, like it's not. So anyway, okay, it's a long topic. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.